From Santa Barbara, California, The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic health care, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, The Timeless Voyager.
This is Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio, and with me today, John M. Fink. He has written a very interesting book called Third Opinion. It's a book for people who want to make informed decisions about alternative cancer care programs. It includes, it's an international directory to alternative therapy centers around the world, and it's for the treatment and prevention of cancer and other degenerative diseases. It's published by Avery Publishing Group. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, you have an interesting background along with being an author. Let's talk about it a little bit. You've been in, you're actually an actor too.
Yes.
Actually,
yes.
An actor first, right?
An actor first.
All right. Okay.
I was an actor for 14 years, actually, before I ever got into this whole world of alternative healing. And I got out of it when I got into alternative healing in this whole episode of my life. And then, because I'm bringing all aspects together, I guess, everything's converging again after an absence of 14 years, I'm back at it.
Well, let's tell people, you have been in such great films as The Flatliners,
yep.
Bonfire of the Vanities. You've been on television with Mary Hartman, Columbo. I'm just reading a few of these folks. Very, very interesting. The Waltons. You were a guest star on The Waltons, and Quincy and the Bionic Woman, and it goes on and on. And I saw you recently at the Christmas Carol Scrooge and Marley at the Center Stage.
Oh, you saw that?
Yes, I
did. You?
Okay. Barefoot in the Park you've done. This is incredible. What 20 episodes you were in the Mary Hartman series.
Yeah, I was on the second year as a regular.
Anyway, okay, so that is your background as an actor. I would like to read some interesting quotes. The Toronto Sun had this to say about the book. Fink had an idea, a vision, if you will, of a directory or guidebook that would provide all the vital information on alternative programs. From the New Age directory, within these pages is the lifeline you need and can use if you or a friend have a so-called terminal illness. This is the only book that you'll need. It's one of a kind. It is also a genuine work of love for humanity. Again, the title, Third Opinion. How did this all start? Here you are, an actor. All of a sudden, you write The Third Opinion. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that background?
Well, I was... I've been working as an actor for, oddly enough, 14 years again. When our oldest child, who was 2 and a half, our only child at that point, contracted a very rare form of cancer. And my wife and I took her to the doctor and several doctors, and basically surgery was the only thing that they felt could help her. And indeed, she was the tumor was removed. And the surgeon at that time said that if they had to do anything conventionally in terms of follow-up, that there just was no evidence that it had ever helped anybody. So he had hoped that he got it out, and they continued to monitor her. And unfortunately, after 6 months, they found a reoccurrence, at which point he turned us over to the oncologists and the radiologists, and they wanted to go ahead and do a very aggressive kind of experimental program. But that didn't make a whole lot of sense to us, because we knew about the rigors of that. We'd known people who had gone through it and children who had gone through it, and couldn't understand why they were pushing something that might impede the quality of her life, particularly if it was going to be a short one. And fortunately, through some acting connections, through an actor I was on Mary Hartman, with, I heard about a group in Los Angeles called Cancer Control Society, wonderful organization that really is there just to dispense information about alternative therapies, and got in touch with them, and they just opened up this tremendous world of information about things you can do.
Now, was this your first experience then with alternative therapies?
Yes, it was. My wife had gone to the health food store. We've been starting to get into health. We've been going to the health food store, and she'd been picking up books by Linda Clark and some of those kinds of things and reading about the value of juices and this and that. So she had a little bit of an orientation towards these things. But really, we didn't know about the centers and the treatment centers that were just geared towards cancer.
All right, let's talk about the term alternative, because I think that's a very ambiguous term to those people who are not familiar with it.
Yeah, alternative means anything other than conventional. Conventional for cancer is basically surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation.
Now, I just want to clear this up. In our Western culture here in the United States of America, alternative therapies are actually looked upon as being less than, aren't they?
Well, yeah, because in our so-called scientific model here, we're looking to prove everything, and if it's unproven, then it's it's not given the certified stamp of approval of the AMA and FDA and so forth. And so these things are outside that realm, and we can get into that later. You know,
all right. Now the problem, of course, is that and we're not going to say anything negative about the AMA on the show, but I will say this. My understanding, after having spoken to Sir Jason Winters and had a number of interviews with him, he said something that I thought was very interesting, and I bring this up quite often, especially when we talk about alternative therapies, and that is that it is actually illegal to make the statement that you have been cured if you have had that occur through an alternative therapy. And a lot of people are not aware of that. And if there is anyone in the AMA who would like to contact me and tell me that I'm wrong, or at least give me the latest information on that, I'd be very happy to hear. But that is my understanding. We still are told by the American Medical Association that alternative therapies are not regarded as being, and I'm going to be very light with this, as accountable, let's say, as the standard therapies. Was this your experience, and is this still your experience?
Yeah, it's not really. I don't agree that it's illegal to say it, because I don't think they're going to come slap the cuffs on you if you say you were cured by an alternative therapy, but I don't think they'll give it any credibility or credence, because, again, it hasn't fit the standard model. But cure, the word cure is an interesting thing, because in the scientific model, anybody can claim a cure that lives 5 years from diagnosis. Now, if you die 5 years and one day after diagnosis of cancer, you've gone statistically down as a cure, even though you died at that point. So it's kind of a statistical game. You know, I mean, there are many people in the alternative field and many people in the cancer field, period, who feel that you don't really cure. You can arrest. You can change the condition, but that that there is no such thing as a true cure. So it's semantics, I guess.
All right. Now, what led you then to write this book, or let's say to compile this information? As I opened the book, I noticed that on any given page, we have the name of a particular clinic or place to go, the address, phone number, primary personnel, directions, how to get there, background, illness treated, treatment offered, related readings, costs. This is incredible. You've done a tremendous amount of work on this.
Yeah, I did. And the reason I did it was because once I got introduced to this, all of these methods, and we went through this, we chose something ultimately to do with our child. My wife's particular genius was that we do this as a family so we don't single our child out. And we had health problems, which responded to this treatment we chose to do, a nutritionally based program in Mexico. Unfortunately, our child lived for about a year and a half after she got on the program before she died, but we felt very strongly then and afterwards that the quality of her life was really helped by...
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, by doing this therapy.
So we're not necessarily going to say that having chemotherapy is good or bad, but I think what we're talking about is that chemotherapy's effects can certainly limit the quality of life, can't they?
Oh yeah, definitely. And although they, you know, they say that they've made some progress in that regard, and they have, but there's no question about it. It's a very toxic substance, and it has very serious side effects, and as does radiation, as does you know, even the immunological things they're now using have very serious side effects, and that certainly impedes the quality of life. There's no question. And you know, I just want to say one thing about it, and that is that the problem is that in some circumstances, based upon how well it's done with certain kinds of cancers, chemotherapy is very appropriate.
Right. The problem I'm glad you is, said that. I'm glad
it's
you
appropriate.
Did.
But the problem is, and I say that in the book, you know, take a look at everything. Don't throw out conventional medicine because it may be have some value to you. But the problem is that they're using it as the only game in town where right. it isn't, you know, appropriate, where it isn't hasn't been statistically supported that it's of any use. And so why do it, you know? And that's the reason I wanted to help get this information out there for other people who wanted to look at other things.
All right. So in your experience with your daughter, you began to become very aware of alternatives. And then at that point, you realized that there was not a directory available for people to use if they wanted alternatives.
That's true, and that's really why I wrote it. You know, I waited around for several years thinking somebody's got to write this because it was so painstaking to get all this information together before I made my choice. And I said, somebody ought to put this under one cover, you know, really get a comprehensive directory with all the nitty-gritty information about everything you need to know if you're in that position, you know, about the insurance and costs and who the contact people are and what the therapy's made up of and who you can talk to that can give you information about what you can read and all that kind of stuff. And I kept waiting, thinking, well, somebody, you know, will write this. Of course, I never at the time was ready to empower myself with the ability to do that. But as I continued the work, and as no one seemed to write it, I guess it came to me that I was going to be the guy to do it. And I really spent several years putting it together. And it originally came out in 88 and has sold close to 20,000 copies without having been in any of the major food chains. I mean, any of the major book chains. And which is a very slow, steady kind of build to it. And the publisher was so pleased with it that they wanted to go ahead and update it, which it badly needed. And so we've just come out with a complete revision. And that's, I'm very excited about that because we have 60 or close to 70 new places in the new one. So,
all right, now let's talk for one moment very quickly. You use the term third opinion. Now I realize that this probably is obvious to a lot of people. But, you know, what is the third opinion?
Well, that came to me, that title, because I saw these alternative therapies being treated like sort of third world things. And second opinion had been used as that was a common mainstream word. It becomes, you know, everybody's familiar with the fact that we should go out now and get a second opinion, or several second opinions. Well, I thought, well, it seems very appropriate that maybe they should get a third opinion. The third opinion would be, you know, one outside the conventional framework. And that's came to me as a good title for the book. And
all right. Now, outside the conventional framework, let's talk for a moment about the treatments, holistic treatments. For our listeners, what are some of these treatments?
Yeah, there's quite a range of treatments, but basically, to try to bring you into the more popular ones, they're mostly to do with the body's ability to heal itself. And they're generally non-toxic substances that are used, like foods, like vitamins, like minerals, herbs, immunostimulants that are non-toxic, to get the body to stimulate the healing process and have it get rid of the cancer or whatever other illness, degenerative condition may be there. There is often a detoxification program associated with many of these treatments. And that addresses the physical part of it. They really are holistic in the sense that many of them now, and certainly if they don't incorporate that, many people are able to go out into the support groups or the visualization centers and get the deal on the psychological level on how to deal with one's attitude and all of that, because there's a lot of evidence to suggest that stress and all of those things which are created if you're not in a positive framework can be detrimental to the healing process. So it's very important to address those aspects and the spiritual aspects. So that's all in the book too. We not only list treatment centers, but I list support groups and address that aspect also.
Are there statistics on these alternative therapies?
Well, you know, that's a good question. There are, there's impossible to come by vital statistics because the places that are really running these, doing these treatments are sort of doing all that they can. They're stressed to the max, just trying to get the therapies to the people, much less they don't have the finances to follow up and do the proper kind of statistics. Some of them have tried, and I was part of a group in Congress, actually, associated with a report that came out that got into that, and some tried and presented some evidence which they were able to follow up on. And, you know, and most of them are not able to give proper statistics. So that's unfortunate. It's interesting about statistics, too. I mean, I must say, because you asked that question, that even the statistics that have been presented over the years by the National Cancer Institute to show improvement in how we're treating cancer conventionally have been widely questioned, not only by the General Accounting Office, but by these two Harvard researchers who took a look at the way they were suggesting these cure rates were improving and said, no, wait a minute, you're manipulating statistics. We're getting earlier diagnoses now, which means that we're looking at it earlier, and yet you're claiming improvement. If you take into consideration the fact that we're diagnosing these cancers earlier, we're not improving at all. And so there you see, you know, when it comes to statistics, you know, you have to be suspicious of even the mainstream ones. So,
who uses these treatments?
They, you know, this is something that I learned early on. I had a tendency to, once I got so impassioned about this, to want to proselytize and tell everybody I knew that had cancer about it. But I realized through people in my own family that everybody's unique, everybody's different, and not everybody wants the same thing. Some people are so conditioned to accept the word of their doctor mm-hmm. that they're just not, it's not
and we know that belief system is very important.
And belief system is very important. And so it's just not appropriate for them. I mean, there's no way, it's going to take some kind of another lifetime, basically, mm-hmm. before they're going to be ready to get into these things. So it's the person who really, I think, was conditioned to question authority, who, you know, tends to be a trailblazer, who tends to, you know, be self-empowered, somebody who believes in natural kind of organic things.
So we're basically where medicine started back, let's say, in the 800s or 900s, when people began the idea of perhaps opening up the body to correct it. We're in a new place now, because I'm sure there were lots of people who would not consider, as a matter of fact, I think for a long time the church said it was wrong to cut open the body. It was wrong to perform autopsies. Basically, all of our medicine is based on having gone against all of the information at that time, all of the religious hoopla that there was at that time. And so now we have basically a backlash? We're almost saying in a way that we shouldn't open up the body. Maybe they were right.
That's
right. We should go back and look at this thing through herbs and all other types of remedies.
That's right. And, you know, it's so funny because they call this medicine, this surgery and all of these things, chemotherapy and everything, they're calling that in this country traditional medicine. Mm-hmm. Well, traditional medicine is really old Chinese herbal medicine, you know, and they call that alternative. The older, it's because so funny because we're really coming back in some ways to what some cultures have known for years and years and years and years. And
because we only have to go back about 200 years for what you might call conventional medicine, but really you could only have to go back 25 years for what's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
So this term traditional really is not true, is it?
No. No, it's not. You know, it's another manipulation, really, and it's unfortunate. But we're evolving, fortunately.
What would you tell a person if they said, "I have cancer"? Where should I go?
You know, they do ask that question. People call me up and they ask that question frequently because they are faced with so many choices. You know, when they look at the book, and by the way, the most important section, as far as I'm concerned in the book, is the guidelines section, which really suggests things to help people narrow down those choices.
Let's talk about the guidelines.
Sure. You know, I tell people to, you know, if you're new to this particularly, you know, it's very confusing to look at all of the therapies that are suggested. And there are certain things they should do. One is to take a look at the commonalities, you know, basically that the underpinnings, the philosophy is the same in all of them. So they're just variations, many of them on the same theme. So that helps, and
Let's be specific.
Well, to be specific, what I was referring to before in terms of detoxification, which is a big part of a lot of these programs. You can detoxify a lot of ways. You can go ranging from coffee enemas to juice purges to fast. There are lots of ways to detoxify.
So the philosophy there being, once again, that the body can heal itself.
Exactly.
That it doesn't need outside influence other than specific direction by the person whose body it is.
Yeah, you can use these natural things without having to cut into the body. I mean, to ingest these things to get the healing process in gear. And before the body can start to heal itself, I was addressing the detoxification element. Mm-hmm. You want to get rid of all these stored toxins in the body so that you give the liver, which is the filtering mechanism of the body, the chance to be clean and purged and in fact, Charlotte Gerson, and it was the Gerson therapy we went to, and that's a very interesting therapy. Her father was a tremendous surgeon doctor out of Germany who came to this country and brought basically the first holistic, if you will, nutritional program to this country that was widely looked at and then ultimately rejected because it was very threatening to the powers that be.
To the drug cartel. I'm talking about the pharmaceuticals now.
Right, but I've slipped my mind because I got on him. I was going to tell you something that she'll come to me in a minute.
Well, we were talking about the fact that people generally are detoxifying their systems in the beginning here.
Yeah, I think I was thinking of something Charlotte Gerson said, and it went out of my mind. But any rate, to get back to that point, it's detoxification. Another commonality would be the fact that you're instead of taking in foods, you're taking in food supplements. But basically, they do the same things. It was the therapy called the Kelly therapy, which became developed by a doctor who had cancer, who did Gerson, and felt that it was just too hard to get the gross amounts of fresh food and organic foods, and so he developed certain supplements. It's the same principle, basically, you know, so you have a choice there. And then there are other choices in the guidelines section, too, suggested, such as what kind of support do you have? Are these things, if you need to get certain components like foods, are they available where you are? Is it reasonable to do this? Can you afford it?
Of course, now the problem that alternative therapies certainly deal with is that, correct me if I'm wrong here, the powers that be, as far as insurance companies are concerned, don't look at these as viable means of therapy, and as a result, don't cover them. Is that correct?
That's generally...
So people are left on their own, aren't they? I mean, they can spend $75,000 for I hate to use chemotherapy, but chemotherapy and surgery and everything, expect their insurance company to probably pay 95% of that. But they could never expect anyone to pay $10,000 worth of herbs, I guess.
Well, the insurance situation is very capricious, and it really depends not only upon the company and the clinic involved or the program involved, because sometimes they are reimbursed, but it depends upon the guy at the insurance company who's getting the claim to process. And they're, you know, because these guys know how to write these things up, many of them go through. And in fact, many of the claims that have been rejected by the insurance companies, these people have gone to court against the insurance companies and recovered their claims in court.
Are the strength. They can begin to dictate what health insurance companies will cover if enough people are doing this.
Yes, I think they ought to get to the day personally when people that are on these programs for preventative reasons are benefited. You know, as the way you would somebody that doesn't smoke.
Right, because here we are. We're really coming right back to the beginning. By the time a person has a grapefruit-sized tumor, it really now is, I'm not going to say it's too late, but it's highly unlikely that a preventative therapy can take care of it. Isn't that, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't want to say that it's, I would say that the larger the tumor, the certainly the more advanced it is in terms of stages, yeah. You know, distant metastases and that kind of thing, which means it's, in other places of the body.
You know what
the
I'm
more difficult
about.
It is to cure, yeah.
I'm saying sure. The preventative side
is the easy way to go and the smart way to go. And that's the way that, yes, there's no question about it.
American Cancer Society is perfectly aware of this and has been, I don't know if they're fighting an uphill battle or not, but basically, they've told us here in the Western world what we should be doing as far as our diet and our lifestyle is concerned.
Yeah, and yes, they
but have. We're depending on the doctor. We're saying, listen, I prefer to smoke because I know that I can have him do what? Get rid of the stuff we still think, again, remember I was talking about the powers that be, the fact that we look at alternative therapy as less than conventional therapy.
Right.
So our tendency is to live the reckless lives we live because we always figure that in the background we can always get high blood pressure pills or have the doctor fix us somehow real quickly.
It's true. It's true. It's sad. I mean, you look at how much anti-smoking information is out there and how many people still smoke. But it is interesting about the diet part of it because prior to 1982... and I got into this in 1979, it was actually quackery to say that there was any association between eating foods and preventing cancer. Eating
now, that's a good
diet
point.
Preventing. It was quackery to
before
say
before 1979.
But 82. Before I got into this in 79, okay. But in 82, this report came out from the National Academy of Sciences, and that was the report that changed the American
So this
cancer
is only sector. 10 years ago.
10 years ago, they finally looked at this report, which was a very large, complete report looking at all these other cultures and how these cancers didn't exist in certain cultures where the diet was high in vegetables and whole grains and low in fats and so on. And the evidence was just overwhelming. So they said, based on that evidence, we have to come out and claim that there is a correlation. And actually, you mentioned the American Cancer Society, they actually were kind of kicking and screaming. They were fairly reluctant to jump onto the bandwagon, but after the National Cancer Institute did, ultimately they did have to jump on the bandwagon, and they have come out with these dietary guidelines, which are very sensible.
And once again, people and their needs and their people dictate. That's one of the nice things. And of course, that doesn't just happen in a democracy. It happens everywhere. People will dictate through their level of consciousness and their awareness how things will change. You even had Swami Satchidananda as listed as one of your references. Let's just touch that for a second. We're going to come back, but I wanted to ask you why.
Oh, well, it's interesting because I was really helped when we got up here to Santa Barbara by an outfit called Prana Produce.
Okay.
And they were delivering organic foods to our house when we needed volumes of produce for this Gerson therapy, and it goes back to that. And through them, I found out that they had this Swami named Satchidananda who spent part of his time here in Santa Barbara. And so through this, the fellowship of these people, I went to hear him. And I got the feeling when I heard him speak that I'd heard him before. And it came to me that I'd been at, he'd spoken at Carnegie Hall. Conrad Rooks, who'd done this film called Siddhartha, had brought him over to this country.
Right.
Peter Max, the artist, had brought him to this country. And he'd spoken at Carnegie Hall, and I'd gone with this person. Right. They'd taken me to hear him. And because when we started chanting, I said, it's very familiar. We really got into the practice of yoga, which was great because I learned through that the meditation. I learned hatha yoga, stretching exercises, and I was a great one of the many areas that I was able to explore on an experiential level that really opened me up more and more to the world of holism.
Now, let's say a person has made their choice. They've gone through it. Is there anything else in the guidelines that you wanted to mention? Because we had gotten off from the guidelines.
But... Yeah. The cost is important.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. What if a person can't afford to go to one of these clinics?
Well, that's very important. And, particularly, I began to address that more the second time around, too, because some of the costs have gone up. So, say, for instance, some of the cheaper programs at the Tijuana clinics, because we live in Southern California. A lot of people are interested in those centers. And there's a clinic called the Hoxie clinic that's been down there for years. The biomedical center does the Hoxie herbal treatments, very well-known treatment for cancer and has been for many years in this country. And they actually would give you a lifetime supply of the herb when I first got into this for $1,500, plus the medical tests, which was a real bargain by any rate. And had, you know, I was down there and I'd see people coming back after 20 and 30 years still getting their herbs, you know, coming from all over the country, and, you know, and they still were set at that price. Now that's gone up to $3,500, and that's still very at the low end of it compared to most of these other treatment centers. But you see how costs are going up, and a lot of people can't afford these things. So what I've really done is to try to address that and say, you know, it's really not necessary to go to a treatment center. You can take the book and you can get an idea looking through there what people are using. A lot of the clinics are using the same specific immunostimulants. You can actually tailor your own program. You can get a local practitioner. Many of them are mentioned in the book, and many aren't, but you can hunt them down, as you know, holistic MDs and so on, to monitor you or help you find out how you're doing on these programs. And a lot of people do that. In fact, the Gerson program I talked about earlier, the best-selling book that promoted that was a book by Jackie Davidson called Cancer Winner. And she had melanoma throughout her body, and she did the Gerson program on her own without ever going to the clinic. And that's the book they touted. So you see, it's possible to do this, and many people do it on that basis.
Let's talk a minute about, and we're going to talk about a few things here. We're going to address some of the higher energy topics. Laetril, vitamin C, and OTA.
Oh, well, okay. Laetril and vitamin C are interesting because Laetril, of course, when I got into this in the late 70s, was the thing that most people knew about in the alternative cancer world. It was
now, what exactly is a Laetril?
Laetril is actually also called vitamin B17. It's an extract taken from the apricot pit, and it has a very small cyanide component to it. And on the basis of the cyanide component, the FDA, when I first got into it, was printing these massive warnings telling people to look out because you really get sick from this stuff. So I was curious because I'd known some people early on that had done it and began to look into it. And the truth is that when there's an unlocking enzyme, and if you took something like an almond, which is has a component in it that could unlock the enzyme, what it would do if you took oral Laetril is it make you a little sick to your stomach, because that cyanide isn't supposed to be unlocked until it gets into the small intestine, and then it goes to work on the cancer cells. The injectable Laetril, no problem. And, you know, to substantiate that, I'd ask these doctors who were proponents of it, if it was so harmless, would they take it? And they'd, you know, these guys would pop one in their mouth and say, look, I take them as preventative. So I started taking it too. Mm-hmm. And they made another good point. You know, they said the same people that are telling you how toxic this stuff is, you know, like these oncologists are giving you something like 5-FU or Adriamycin. Ask an oncologist if he'll do the same thing. If this is, ask him if he'll take a little bit of chemotherapy if it's not so harmful. And I've yet to find one that would ever do that, you know, even take a minute amount. So
how about the vitamin C?
Vitamin C is, of course, it's not really suggested that that's toxic, except in maybe super massive doses. Linus Pauling is the great guy that's the proponent of that, and says he takes 20 grams or 20,000 milligrams a day and suggests that cancer patients take that amount or upwards to that amount. You can basically tell if you're ODing by how you're, you know, if you start getting the a loose stool or the runs, that kind of thing, then maybe you're taking too much, you have to cut back. But both Laetril and vitamin C were tested. They're two substances that were given a lot of attention in the alternative community that were tested by the powers that be at the Mayo Clinic, and I think one of the tests on Laetril was at Sloan Kettering in New York, and both instances, the tests that they did on them were inconclusive. It did not suggest that there was any efficacy. So those were intended to really put the nail in the coffin of both Laetril and vitamin C. However, both those studies were widely criticized because, in the case of Laetril, because the substance they were using had a missing isomer and wasn't to be the proper substance, according to the Laetril proponents, that that they should have used. And in the case of vitamin C, Pauling was widely critical of it for a number of reasons. One of which was that they cut people off. They get them on these doses of vitamin C, and then they'd cut them off cold turkey. And it's well known that there's a thing called the rebound effect. If you're on vitamin C, that's one vitamin you do not. If you start to kick up your dose, you do not cut off fast. You come gradually down, because what it does is the body's robbed of something it's used to, and then it starts to it has such a deficiency that it actually creates a stress in the body looking for it. So it's these things, as far as most of us who are concerned, are still pretty inconclusive as far as...
Now, the word unconventional doesn't seem fair. They say unconventional cancer treatments. If they use the word alternative, it sounds a lot better, because unconventional certainly sends out the message that people who would treat conventionally would want sent out, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you ask about the OTA a second ago, which opens up the whole thing about the OTA. It stands for the Office of Technology Assessment, which is a branch of Congress. And they did a study, a three-year study, and I was an advisory panel member on that study, looking at unconventional cancer therapies. And the first, we went on for days sitting around this panel discussing what we were going to call this. And actually... they thought the word unconventional, they being the OTA people, thought the word unconventional was too, they didn't like it because they thought it was too endorsing of alternatives. So they preferred the word unorthodox, which is much worse, I think. And so it was unorthodox for a long time, but then they were convinced that it suggested religion and this and that. And so they finally came around to unconventional. But yeah, they would absolutely not do alternative.
So was that the report?
The report was finally called unconventional cancer treatments.
But they wanted to say unorthodox.
They did, but they finally conceded that.
Now, what was their problem with it?
The problem with the title or with the...
No, what is their problem with... I suppose they have a problem with alternative cancer.
Oh, yeah, because you have to look at it this way. A lot of us were very excited when the OTA decided to do this. The OTA looks at science and policy issues, and it's said to be a non-political body. And if you have a government agency looking at it, it had the greatest chance of being unbiased.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is that the people that are on the OTA are people who come from a conventional scientific background. So naturally, there's no such thing as non-biased.
And the AMA is one of the biggest lobbies, isn't it?
Well, the AMA is one of the biggest lobbies, absolutely, no question about it.
And they can put a lot of pressure on people if they want to.
Yeah, well, now, they can put pressure on the politicians.
Let me just say, folks, I do not have a bone to pick with the AMA. I'm just mentioning that.
Right.
Okay.
But the OTA is actually supposed to be apart from that. You're not supposed to be able to lobby them and all that. They're directly answerable to their board.
But aren't these people, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
The people who are on OTA,
right, of course,
are conventional physicians, scientists who have worked within the framework of quote-unquote conventional therapies all of their lives.
Right.
And they are the very ones who we're expecting to give an unbiased report to unconventional, quote, unconventional therapies.
Right. And it was the most interesting process I've ever participated in. Really, really interesting.
What was your overall feeling when you left?
My overall
feeling... This is your opinion.
My overall feeling was, boy, did I get a civics lesson. I'll tell you, it was the greatest... It was amazing that you can change things, that there was this strong bias there, but because many of us insiders were able to schmooze and to put pressure on and to convince and to sit down and present evidence over and over and over again, it's sometimes required. And people on the outside of the process were also able to put a lot of pressure on. Ultimately, they came up with what I would have to regard as a pretty fair document, particularly considering what the first draft report looked like, which was heavily biased. I mean, they were, just to give you an example, they were doing things like, they were doing all the negative, they did a report, special report on the negative effects of alternative treatments. They never would look at the positive side of it. And they were presented all these positive studies, and they weren't even including most of them. They wouldn't even recognize most of them.
So they were editing a lot.
So it was definitely, a stacked deck. And
okay.
But, what it shows is that you can make a difference. You know, it's not the ideal report, but it definitely was a step forward, no question about it.
How can a person spot a quack? I mean, if you're going to get involved in alternative therapies, and of course there are plenty of physicians out there I wouldn't want to go to, but let's stay with this.
Yeah, well, anybody, you know, it was interesting because quackery is one of those things. It's just one of those words you just love, you know. Quack, you know, it's so disparaging. And snake oil salesman, right. Quack. These guys are quacks. You know, they're there to take your buck. They're there to bilk you.
And, of course, we've just come. It's only been about 5 years, I think, since chiropractic came out of the world of quackery and into the world of traditional medicine.
Thanks to a U.S. District Court, Circuit Court, and a judge named Gatzendammer.
I'm just saying, I mean, this is an important fact for people who are listening to realize that chiropractic, which has tremendous use now,
yes,
overnight, just through that particular
judgment. Yeah, and it's really made a lot of doctors have the courage to work with chiropractors now and refer patients. I mean, the open-minded ones to refer patients to chiropractors without fear or recrimination.
So anyway, the question: how can a person spot a quack? Can they spot a quack?
Well,
that's the first question. Can you spot a quack?
Can you spot a quack?
You probably can't.
Usually, they have a bill and they go quack quack.
It's true. You probably can't spot them, can you?
You know. That's very hard. And of course, who's they? You know, I mean, one of us may spot one of them, one of us may not. You know, what I say in the book is that there are quacks both inside and outside the mainstream. And what I think is a quack is somebody who's intentionally representing something that they know isn't true in order to make a dollar.
Right.
And I think that they do exist. And I generally tell people that find out if a place has been around, somebody's been around for a while, ask for those word of mouth recommendations because that's the best protection you've got. You know, the definition that they used for quackery for a long time was anybody that promotes a treatment that's unproven. That means hasn't been proven for safety and efficacy. See, that's the old scientific model again, right? Those are the clinical trials that are going to cost you $200 million and take from 7 to 10 years, you know. And anyway, so that's how they got around it. So the thing was, an OTA report came out which said that 80% of medical procedures that are being used have never gone through tests for safety and efficacy.
So by that definition,
they're all quackery. So, you know, so they decided they better come up with a new definition.
So we've all gone to a quack, right?
So we've all been to quacks.
And have not spotted them.
Right.
Okay. I like that very much. You know, you bring up many therapy centers in the book. Are there educational services and support groups also?
Oh, yeah. And the educational centers are places, for instance, the wheatgrass clinics are listed under educational centers, both domestically and internationally. And the macrobiotic centers also, simply because they don't like to be considered treatment centers. But in essence, what they're doing is, you know, you get on those programs, and if you reverse it, you're being treated. It's a matter of semantics. So for people looking at treatment centers, they would also want to refer to the educational centers. Support centers really are made up of those groups that are, you know, there to support patients through, you know, through group interaction, through education about visualization and so forth, which I think people are finding more and more is a useful adjunct to whatever they're doing to treat their cancer and the physical.
Let's talk about that. There are breakthroughs in the psychosocial field. Let's talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, there sure are, you know, and of course the Symingtons did their work. They were pioneering that work back in the 70s and talking about it, and it was branded quackery. It was branded all alternative quackery, and people were very upset about it in the conventional psychological world because they were saying, gee, you know, you're telling a patient he's empowered to cure himself, that he might have had something to do with getting the disease through his lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Well, that's laying a terrible negative trip on him. That was the basis of the criticism. Not understanding the whole concept of self-empowerment.
People like the idea of being innocent and all of a sudden getting sick. What people don't like is that they're not innocent and that they've caused the sickness, right?
That's right. Well, you know, it really comes down to empowerment, you know. Right. Who's going to tell you? Do we empower the experts?
That's what we've done, isn't it?
Yeah, we have.
We've taken our power and we've handed it over to the doctor.
That's it.
When you're sick, you go to the doctor because he knows how to fix you. You are innocent. Somehow you have caught something. This is the way you caught it. You know, you were sitting in the house and someone gave it to you.
That's right. They gave it to you. Right. So it's self-empowerment, you know, and now, fortunately, the times changed. You know, they've got a whole new field now called psycho-oncology at Sloan Kettering. It's fabulous. And in fact, I heard one of their key speakers within the last few months say on a podium. I couldn't believe it. I thought, boy, I'd never live to see the day. Say that alternative therapies, it's now being more and more recognized that alternative therapies have their day and have their importance, certainly in the quality of life issues, should I say. And I thought, am I hearing right? I had to kind of bang my ears. And then, you know, Time Magazine on November 4th came out with a very favorable cover story on alternative medicine. And, you know, it's changed. Things certainly have changed and will continue to change. But the Spiegel study at Stanford was the one that really turned things around a lot. And there are more of these studies coming out. I read about one just yesterday in the paper at UCLA. A guy named Fauci did it. But basically, these are studies geared towards looking at the Spiegel study was breast cancer patients in a support group at put up against a group of patients who were not in a group. That's kind of a conflict, isn't it? A group that's not in a group. Mm. I mean, individuals that weren't in a group. And they found that the ones that
A non-support group?
A non-support group.
This is where they sit around and say, we are all going to be ill.
Right.
And they support each other in this endeavor.
Right. Right. That's another study they should do. So anyway, what they found was that these patients in the support group, and Spiegel really thought that it had no value. He was setting out to disprove it. He said he found that these people were living much longer and doing better when they had this imposter.
And that makes
frame
it a very strong study.
And it's
that he started out to disprove it. I like that a lot.
Yes, yes. And he's duplicating that study now. He's trying to find other people to replicate it. There's a study in the paper yesterday. I brought it with me. Fauci at UCLA, and he's looking at these 38 patients were randomly assigned to a program that took 9 hours over 6 weeks. It included education about melanoma. There was melanoma patients, what to do for long-term preventions and lessons on problem solving, how to deal with such issues as relationships with one's doctor, family, and coworkers. The problem-solving segment taught patients not to consider themselves passive victims. See, here we go again. 5 years later, evaluation with a standard psychological test showed participants in the program did better than the other patients on the overall measure of mood disturbance. The measure included anxiety, depression, anger, lack of vigor, fatigue, and confusion. They showed better coping strategies 5 years after the program ended. So you see there's more of these things coming out.
So in other words, if a person takes the responsibility of feeling that they are, quote unquote, somewhat guilty for having become ill, then chances are when they recover, they'll be able to keep that type of thing that caused it from happening again.
Yeah. And
as opposed to feeling it was passive.
Yeah.
Because if you're passive, you feel helpless. If you're helpless, there's no way to stop it, is there?
Right. I'd agree with everything you said. I probably just wouldn't use the word guilty.
I knew you wouldn't like the word
You know I'd get you for guilty.
last thing I thought I would do, we've got about 3 minutes. I want to just make up a place that I live in the United States and see if we can find a place there. Are you ready?
All right.
Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh, yeah, there's actually...
Is there one? Let's find out. How would I look at it?
There's a place called People Against Cancer, an organization. It's in Otho, Iowa.
Well, wait a minute. Now, I want to see if I can find
it. You want to know? You're going to pin down...
How am I going to do this? You tell me.
You got to go back to regional listings.
Regional listings.
But actually, it'll only tell you Midwest. It won't tell you the
I'm going to hand you the book.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to go to regional listings.
Okay.
In the back, because and in regional listings, it doesn't break it down by state, but it breaks it down by district.
All right.
And then it will tell me, when I hit regional listings, it's going to tell me, here we have something called North Central. And it says North Central, Northeast, South. So North Central. And it lists about 10, 15 places. And it has little T's and S's next to it, treatment or ease, educational or support. Mm-hmm. And it lists them. And then you have to go through and you say, well, that may be in Iowa.
Okay.
So I'll just check it. And so I'll just cross-reference it and so on. If it's in Iowa, believe me, it's going to be in North Central.
So it's an easy book for a person to use. It's a tremendously helpful book. It is the only book. That is exactly what the New Age Directory says. It's the only book available.
Yeah, it's the only one like it. That's for sure.
What would you say? We've got about 2 minutes. What would you like to tell people?
Well, I'd like to say that, of course, you know, we've talked about prevention. That is the most important aspect. And the other thing is we all look forward to the day when we can really do metabolic workups on people and, you know, and find out what their weaknesses are and tailor these programs. And in order to kind of put more emphasis in this, people need to, educate themselves through the various books that are available out there about this kind of thing. But also, you know, if you have the inclination, lay on your congressman a little bit because you got to be diligent about this. You know, you got to fight this political battle too.
All right, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. Thank you very much, John M. Fink. The book, Third Opinion, Avery Publishing Group. I want to thank all of you for tuning in, Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.